Hello and welcome back to the 18 Yards podcast. We're back for season three. We're going to try and be more regular. You've heard it before, but this time we may actually try. As always, I've got Ari here with me. Transfer window has only been open for almost a month, slightly less, and it's been pretty busy already. Ari, how have you been? What's going on?
All good. All good. I'll tell you what, you know, this year, you know, I promise, guys, we are going to be regular AF. And I'm not even kidding. I think every week we're going to be recording some insane content for you all. And we'll be putting out on all our social media platforms, plus Apple Podcasts, plus Spotify, and plus all the other places where we take out our podcast. But yeah, you know, I've been good. Really excited to see, players change clubs, you know, all the transfer drama. That's what we live for in off season, because honestly, you know, without football, life gets a bit boring. So transfer is the only thing that keeps us going. So yeah, I'm really excited to start season three.
So obviously, the last time we recorded, we did that really great episode with Stephen Constantine, which you can find wherever you listen to 18 Yards. It was really, really cool talking to him about his time in India. You know, his time, a little bit about his time in Nepal, and, you know, just to talk to a manager who's managed in so many places, and that really gave us a great insight into Indian football. But that was before the season had even finished. So in the time since we last recorded, obviously, Ari's team Madrid won the Champions League. Spurs are back in the Champions League next season, and we're coming for the crown. So it's been a good optimistic summer, I think, for both of us so far. So let's get right into the transfers. What we're basically going to do for our transfers, just initially, because there isn't much else to talk about with preseason just sort of starting. In today's episode, we're going to talk about some of the bigger clubs, some of the clubs that we think are having a good window, some clubs that may not be having that great a window, and some clubs, basically, these are the clubs that I think everyone want to hear about. That's today's episode. In next week's episode, we're going to be doing a more player-based look at the transfer window. We're going to be looking at 15 transfers that we think should happen. So whether that's because we think a player would really, you know, gel well in a particular league or a team, or if a team would require a certain type of player or a certain player in their team and why. So, if you have any suggestions for that for next week, just drop them. If you're listening on YouTube, in the comments on YouTube or on our social media. But yeah, let's get right into it, Ari. I'm going to let you go first. You can open with Madrid. You know, that was the sort of the beginning of the window, even much before the window started, the Mbappe saga. And obviously that ended in a way that you would not have hoped. Thankfully for you, it was, I think, really close to the Champions League final. So I don't think you guys really cared about Mbappe at that point.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. You know, since 2018, you know, the only thing that I was always sure was, showed off was like, you know, Kylian Mbappe would be joining Madrid. And, you know, when he said that he signed an extension with PSG, you know, I felt like my imaginative girlfriend had actually broken up with me, because I felt really betrayed. But, you know, you're right. You know, we won the championship, like, if I'm not wrong, like a week before Mbappe announced, whatever decision he made. Completely ruining his career, but that's a discussion for sometime else. So even though we won the Champions League, you know, it softened the blow of Mbappe, you know, completely disregarding his dream and completely disregarding whatever, all the time, you know, his fans have defended him and Madrid fans have actually begged him to come to Madrid, disregarded all of that in one go because of obviously PSG throwing unlimited cash at his face and at his family. So whatever, I mean, that's his decision. But, I'll be honest here. Who needs Mbappe, right? We have a certain Brazilian who I think, I'm going to be honest with you. I think he's better than Pelé. goes by the name of Vinicius Junior. I think most of you must have heard of him. He actually scored the goal in the Champions League final also against Liverpool. So anyway, Mbappe's old news now. He can rot in Paris. You're gonna know he can be irrelevant for the rest of his life. We'll keep on winning champions. We won 14 Champions League without him, and we'll continue to win Champions League and the league titles without him. We have the best player in the world currently, goes by the name of Karim Benzema. So we have a good team. Plus, on top of that, we have added Rudiger to our backline for free. Thank you, Chelsea, for not renewing his contract. And thank you, Real Madrid, for being Real Madrid and still being a dream club for certain players. So Rudiger joined us. I'm really happy because that gives us a chance to, you know, experiment with the backline. You know, we can even play with the back three of Alaba, Rudiger and Militao. And if we want, we can play Alaba as a left back instead of Mondi and play Rudiger and Militao in the center of the defense. So it gives a lot of options to experiment with the starting 11, to experiment with the backline. And obviously, you know, we've been, since Pepe left us, and since Ramos left us last year, we've actually been, even though Militao and Alaba are good, we've actually wanted a type of defender who won't take shit from anyone, from an opposition. In fact, he'll give a lot of shit to the opposition, you know, punch them, you know, be violent on the field. And I think Rudiger is that type of player. He's like Pepe, he's like Ramos, you know, he'll stare you down and make you feel inferior when you're up against him. So that's a great, great plus point. And also Tchouaméni, a person who actually rejected PSG and joined Real Madrid to fulfill his dreams. Mbappe, I hope you're taking notes, man. He actually fulfilled his dream and he was damn young. And, you know, a lot of teams in Europe actually wanted his services. He's a brilliant player, you know. With us signing Tchouaméni from Monaco, it actually, you know, solidifies our entire future, especially in the midfield, because even though Modric, Kroos and Casemiro have been in brilliant form since the day they stepped foot in the Santiago Bernabeu, naturally we will need a future plan for when these three are towards the end of their career. I think Modric already is, so is Kroos. But luckily, you know, with Tchouaméni, we already have a midfield trio to take up the mantle, you know, with Camavinga, who had an excellent debut season last season. You know, change Champions League games on his own. Brilliant player. Obviously, Fede Valverde, who's been in the setup right since 2018, since the year Ronaldo left us, he's been brilliant. You know, he's a utility player, right? He can play as a right back, he can play as a central midfielder, he can play as a right wing, as he did in the Champions League final, providing that crucial assist for Vinicius' goal. And obviously now Tchouaméni, who comes in as a backup for Casemiro right now. But in a couple of years, I see him starting in the midfield trio consisting of Camavinga and Valverde along with him. So I think Madrid have made some smart signings, even after getting betrayed by a long one-sided love, it turned out to be, with Mbappe. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this season. I am really excited to see how these two signings turn up for Madrid. And I'm actually looking forward to if Madrid makes a new signings or not. But that's a discussion for some other time. So yeah, honestly, Rayhan, I'm really, really excited to see what happens in the future for Madrid.
So from Madrid and Mbappe, we go to, and that was a very long, drawn out saga, right? I mean, it was there last summer. It was there in the winter. You know, Twitter was flooded with turtle emojis. So it was long, drawn out. We went to the other sort of generational talent in Haaland, going to City in a deal that was, I think, very quick, very early on in the window. I think it was done even before last season ended. And I mean, you know, so we'll talk a little bit about City, even though I don't think we need much time to talk about them, because City are, as City always does, they're spending money, and they're spending money in the right places, right? So Haaland for 60 million, I mean, obviously he had that release clause in his Dortmund contract, but I mean, so that's the caveat in that deal, because that's why they got him for so cheap. But in this market, Haaland for 60 is insane. I mean, that's nuts. then, and I don't need to, neither of us really need to, you know, talk about his quality. But, you know, Calvin Phillips, do you think he goes straight into that midfield? Do you think he will have to contend with Rodri? Do you think, I mean, what are your thoughts on Phillips to Man City?
I think, you know, since before this season, they honestly only had like two options for players in the defensive midfield position. One was Rodri, obviously, who had in my opinion, had a brilliant season last season. And the other one was Fernandinho, who I think is in the twilight of his career and actually has left City to go back and play in Brazil. So I don't think Calvin Phillips straight away replaces Rodri in their best starting 11. But I think to have a backup as a DM in a player like Calvin Phillips is a massive statement signing for Manchester City, right? I've always thought City is a team that makes unnecessary expensive signings, right? With Nathan Ake, with Mangala in the past, they've actually had a very, very bad experience with some of these signings from lower teams across Europe. But I think Calvin Phillips is a player who's actually really quality. You know, Bielsa created him, right? And you can't go wrong with players Bielsa creates, in my opinion.
And I think just on what you were saying with them, in the way they're signing players now, obviously, I still, you know, there are lots of questions about the way the club is run financially. Like today, they did a deal with a company that I think it's one of those companies that very clearly looks like a shell company. So there are questions there. So if you put that aside, though, you know, when they started off with the new money, they were throwing it around. But in the last couple of seasons, even if you look at their net spend, it has been, they're matching, it's basically at par. So they sold Ferran Torres for 65 million. They sold a couple of young players. They sold Angelino last summer and they brought in Grealish. So they're pretty much level. I think this summer as well, they're looking to sell Sterling, looking to sell Nathan Ake. We don't know if Barcelona are going to come in for Bernardo Silva, but apparently if they pay the money, he may go. They sold Jesus. And they've brought in, they're basically, I think, at the end of this window between Haaland, Phillips and Cucurella are going to spend about 140-ish million, maybe 150.
And also they've also signed Julian Alvarez, who I think is, he's brilliant.
Yeah, Julian Alvarez. So maybe it goes up to maybe about 170 to 180. And I think they recoup most of that money. I think, I mean, you look at the likes of Arsenal and even Tottenham, who spent a considerable amount this summer, especially if you compare City financially with their Manchester rivals in United. United have actually in the last couple of years spent, and they're not recouping money. I mean, Pogba's gone on a free. Alexis Sanchez, who came in for big money, was, you know, didn't really, I don't think he got them that much back. I can't really think of, you know, where United are sort of making up their net spend. For all the talk about how the Glazers don't back them, etc., I just find it, you know, they are spending money. It's like, I mean, it is there. Last summer they brought in Ronaldo, etc., etc.
I think they're a very, very badly run club, not just financially, but like everything about the club stinks.
Yeah, so I mean, we're talking about them. I don't really want to get into Cucurella right now, because I think he may come up in next week's episode. So we can move straight on to United. They announced Malacia today. Very honestly, I'd never seen him play. Don't know about him. Apparently very highly rated. But, you know, player coming from the Dutch league again. We saw Bergwijn was killing it in the Dutch league. Didn't really work at Spurs. Van der Beek didn't really work at United. Off the top of my head, I can't really remember any more recent transfers from the Eredivisie to the Premier League. But, you know, I mean, it looks like a player with a lot of potential.
No, plus I'll tell you one thing. So basically, I was having this conversation with one of my friends, right? And he came to me and he's like, bro, I saw I've seen Malacia play, right? And he's a brilliant player. And I asked him, you know, you follow the Dutch league. You're like, no, I just came off YouTube and I saw him. I saw his compilation for like 15 minutes. And in those 15 minutes, he's decided Malashe is going to take the league by storm. And I think that that summarizes how Manchester United fans are hungry for good news surrounding the club, right?
I don't know if it's something that comes with playing at a club the stature of United, or if it's just something about modern football. You know, I mean, just slightly off topic from United, but you had this with Pogba, right? Even though he wasn't performing, you could see that this signing is not working out. Every year there would be a huge, you know, from within the United fan base, from other places, this entire push that, yeah, you know, he's going to get it right this time. I've seen it at Spurs with Ndombele, right? Obviously, not counting the first summer because he was a new signing, so obviously everyone was expecting something. The second summer, last summer, you know, and even now I'm seeing on Twitter a couple of people are getting excited that, you know, he may be, if he can get fit under Conte, then he can crack it. But, you know, sometimes signings don't work.
Yeah,
it's the way modern football is now, how that these guys get hyped so quickly, right? And it's not easy, dude. I mean, it doesn't even, I mean, you can see in the path that it's not easy going from Feyenoord to playing for United. It's not.
Yeah.
So we don't know about Malasia, but I think one signing that United already made, obviously pending, I think, the final details, is Eriksen. I think that is a sure shot signing. And that is one of the few sure shot signings that United have made in the last couple of years. I think that made it their best signing in the last couple of years. Off the top of my head, I can't really remember anyone who's, maybe you can say Bruno Fernandes, because he was really, really good that one season. Not bad last season either. But I think this signing, Eriksen, is, you saw with him at Brentford, you know, after everything that happened, not playing football for 6 months and then coming in and when Spurs played Brentford, he was like, I was like, oh my God, why isn't this guy playing for Spurs? Obviously, I think if Spurs had gone in for him, I think he would have gone to Spurs, because early on when Spurs was still interested, you could hear that he wanted Champions League football and he wanted to stay in London. I think at the end, apparently Spurs didn't want to go for him and United offered him a lot of money. But it's a good signing. You know, I have no ill will towards Eriksen. If Spurs had gone for him and he had chosen United, then maybe. But last big contract of his career, after everything that's happened, you know, hopefully he doesn't do well at United. But, you know,
I'll be honest with you, you know, I actually kind of feel a little sad for Eriksen, you know, because it reminds me of that little scene in The Office, right? You know, Stanley, he gets a heart attack, right? And then he comes back and then the first thing he says is, my doctors advised me to stay in a stress-free environment. And the environment is so full of stress. It's everyone's, you know, just making jokes and all that stuff. You know, it's just toxic environment. And Stanley's like, I'm going to die here. And I'm telling you, I'm getting the same vibe from Eriksen. I feel really sorry for him because he just got off a heart disease. And now he's come back into a club which is so toxic, so stressful. I'm hoping he does well. But if it doesn't,
yeah, I think this is the type of signing that can change, you know, even this environment around United. Obviously, the Ronaldo situation does not help. But, you know, if Ronaldo's not there, then who is Eriksen exactly supplying the ball to becomes a question. But if Ronaldo stays, Eriksen, Ronaldo, that's going to be a really lethal combination, because Eriksen has an eye for a pass. I mean, obviously De Bruyne is a better player, but the numbers he puts up are De Bruyne-esque, you know, in terms of creativity. But moving from Eriksen to obviously Frenkie de Jong, seems like it's going to happen again, something we'll talk about next week. Ronaldo saga. He's been given indefinite leave. And he's training in Portugal, apparently for family reasons. We don't know. Obviously, you have to keep in mind that towards the end of last season, I think a lot of people have forgotten what him and his family went through. So if it's something related to that, then completely understandable. But I do think that Ronaldo would have turned up regardless of the situation. I don't think he wants to play at United anymore. Yeah, and you know, it's weird to be on this side of a saga like this a year on from when I was saying no, Kane shouldn't leave, you know, loyalty, this, that, to now saying, you know, I don't blame Ronaldo that, you know, he's 37 now.
37.
He's got maybe what, 1-2 years where he can try and win the Champions League. I don't understand going to Chelsea. They're in a bit of a turmoil, which we'll get to. Bayern, maybe, especially if they sell Lewandowski. I mean, ex-Madrid player. So what do you think about this saga?
I completely agree with you. I mean, Mr. Champions League cannot play the Europa League. I mean, that isn't how nature works. That's not how Ronaldo works. And that's not how Ronaldo should work. You know, his entire life, he's been known for a lot of things. But one of the best things he's known for is turning up in the Champions League. And now, if there's no Champions League, why would he even bother turning up? Like, and I don't blame him for that. He's about to retire in a couple of years, like you said. And obviously, a guy like Ronaldo, who's one of the greatest of all times, he deserves to retire while playing at the biggest of the stages, fighting for the biggest of the trophies. You can't expect him to be fighting for a top six finish in the Premier League and then fighting for maybe a Conference League title or maybe a Europa League title. And even if you expect that from him and then you blame him, I think that's pretty wrong of you. Unless obviously you are a diehard United fan and you want the best for your club, then obviously you would want to play Ronaldo in your team, who scores around 25 goals every season guaranteed, even being 37 years old. But, you know, I completely agree with you. I agree where Ronaldo's coming from. And as a fan of football, as a fan of Ronaldo, I obviously want him to move on to a team that is playing in the Champions League. And honestly, I don't care if it's Bayern or Chelsea. As long as he's playing in the Champions League, as long as he's up there fighting with the best teams, I'm happy for him.
Yeah, and you know, I just think that, I mean, again, obviously it's very weird for me saying this because last summer, we were in no position to be thinking about playing the Champions League, you know, to be qualifying for the Champions League with Nuno and the state the squad was in. But it's just for me, I just don't see United, although now with Eriksen, Frankie de Jong, they are making some good moves, maybe even Lisandro Martinez. But I just don't see United, especially if Chelsea strengthen the way they're looking to strengthen, I don't see United really, really pushing and coming forth. So I just think, I mean, just off the back of managerial quality, which I think most times does not fail you, right? You're guaranteed a Pep and Klopp top four finish.
Right? Yeah.
I think that's pretty much a guarantee. I would say Conte, and with the moves Spurs have made, they are the closest to those two. And I say this because of Chelsea's form in the back end of last season, sort of, you know, obviously new owners, bit of a transition right now. I would still say Chelsea are fourth. Arsenal are knocking at the door. I don't particularly believe that Arteta, with more than a game a week, can actually produce the type of performance he brought out from the Arsenal players last season. So I think, you know, I mean, we'll get into the predictions later on. I don't want to speak too early. But yeah, I just think that, you know, I don't see United, even not this season, next, this coming season, but the season after that also, I don't see them, you know, going to get into the Champions League. So if Ronaldo doesn't move now, next season, who's going to take him?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
He can't guarantee. I mean, Kane was 28 when he wanted to move. You could still like feel that Kane would still be good at 30, but Ronaldo at 39, you don't know. At 38, you don't know. You know, one big injury and something changes. Anyways, enough about Ronaldo and United. Moving on to a club that Ronaldo is linked to, Chelsea. You know, there are lots of links here. We'll run through a couple of the names, but I think something more to focus on would be the way they're restructuring the club. Obviously, you know, most of the top executives have left. I think Tuchel is obviously playing a bigger role in making transfers, which actually he said in March that something he was not keen on doing. He just wanted to coach, and something that, you know, I think when he's just allowed to coach, he's much better than when he has to make these sort of decisions. Todd Boehly is obviously also very involved. I think he's de facto director of football right now. But yeah, some of the more concrete ones, they're looking at Dilip, but Bayern seems to be trying to get one over them on that one. They're trying for Ake, who, I mean, a lot of people are like, yeah, he'll be a good player, but I don't see it. I mean, even when he's been at City and the few times he's played, he's not been convincing. I mean, just off the back of last season when he played against Spurs, first game of the season, he was City's weakness, you know. And with Rudiger leaving, Christensen leaving, Thiago Silva getting busy towards the end of his career, Chalobah was good last season, but you don't know with players like that, you know, sometimes they can't follow up a good season with another. They may be lacking in defense. Lukaku's left. Who are they going to get? Obviously, they've been linked to Neymar. They've been linked to Ronaldo. Looks like Sterling is one of their more sure transfers, which I think is a fantastic move, but that's not what they need. Right? They actually need that number nine. Last season, when they signed Lukaku, all of us said, yeah, Chelsea's going to... I said Chelsea may win the title. Right? I had said in our prediction video last season that if City sign Kane, City will win it. If City don't sign Kane, then I think Chelsea will be the closest to challenging them. And come to the end of last season, Chelsea were basically almost in the top four scrap. You know, I think if Arsenal and Tottenham had kept up good form, if Tottenham hadn't lost to Brighton and drawn to Brentford, and Arsenal hadn't dropped, I mean, Arsenal dropped a lot. You know, they dropped to Brighton, Crystal Palace, Southampton, etc., etc. If Arsenal hadn't dropped those games, Chelsea may have been in the Europa League, you know, after a good season. So, I don't know. I mean, if you were in Chelsea at the moment, do you think Ake is a good start and Sterling, who are some of the other players you would look at? Because I don't think United will let Ronaldo go to another Premier League team.
I think, you know, you're right. I mean, what Chelsea's biggest strength was last year, their defense, is now, I think, their biggest weakness going into the new season. Because obviously they've lost Christensen on a free to Chelsea, Christensen on a free to Barca, Rudiger on a free to Real Madrid. Aspilicueta is like, he's pretty old, didn't start much games last season. Last year on his contract, he might not be putting up great performances week in, week out. Thiago Silva's on, obviously, towards the end of his career. He won't be playing all the games. And like you said, yeah, Nathan Ake is not a bad player, but he's not a player that starts 38 games in the league for you if you're challenging for a top four finish, right? And as simple as that. I always saw Nathan Ake as a Christensen-like replacement. Obviously, thought Christensen is a better player. But if they're buying Nathan Ake, I think they're buying him as a Christensen replacement. You know, play 25-odd games in the league every season. That'll be enough. But yeah, Dilip, if he goes to Bayern, that'll be a big, big miss. That'll be a big, big miss for Chelsea, right? Because Dilip is actually a brilliant player. He's pretty young and he slots straight in the starting 11, right? Be it a back four or be it a back three at Chelsea, right? Whatever Tuchel plays next season. So if he goes to Bayern, then Chelsea are in big, big trouble. Because I don't think buying Sterling would cover up the cracks they have in defense, or even buying Ronaldo for that matter. If they get Ronaldo from Manchester United, I don't think that will cover the cracks that they will have in defense. But the other area of concern is obviously, like you mentioned, a number nine. Lukaku didn't perform well. They tried using Kai Havertz a lot of games as a floating number nine, false nine, floating number nine. He performed well for a few games, but then also his form also dipped quite a bit. But I still trust Kai Havertz. You know, if they don't have Ronaldo, I still trust Kai Havertz to, you know, score 10 to 12 odd goals in the league. And with obviously, you know, Sterling also coming in, I think he's coming into Chelsea 100%. Sterling coming in, scoring. Sterling gives you 10 goals guaranteed in the league. That's the minimum Sterling gives you. He's a brilliant player. But yeah, doesn't matter how many tackles they signed, right? The defense is very, very thin at the minute. And that too, the players that they have aren't really great currently in the current footballing world. So yeah, Chelsea are heading into season with a big problem, and that might that will come back to haunt them once the season gets into the business ends of days. Yeah.
So moving to another part of London, Arsenal. you know, they signed Jesus, they signed Fabio Vieira, they've signed Marquinhos, I think is his name. Young
Brazilian.
And they've signed Matt Turner, who is American goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I think Matt Turner, Marquinhos, I think they are sort of fringe signings. But Jesus and Vieira, I've never heard of until Arsenal, you know, sort of where it looked like he was going to Arsenal. But from what I've read, rated very highly by people who watch Portuguese football. Creative player, I don't know where he'll slot into their team, because I think they got overrun in midfield. You know, Partey is always injured. And Xhaka has that sort of error in him. Sometimes Elneny is not really off the quality. So I would have thought they would have gone for one of those type of signings. I mean, I would have thought that, you know, Bissouma would have been a great signing for them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Jesus obviously has bags of quality. And there was that purple patch for him last season, which was really, really good. And I wouldn't have minded him at Tottenham as a backup player. But, you know, I just think that Arsenal, they're not going to get Rafinha anymore. But I think that what they're really lacking is that player who, that X-factor player, right? I think we've had this conversation before, that, and I've always said that they're lacking that really world-class player.
A marquee player.
Yeah, you know, I mean, for example, you look at all the teams around them, you know, all said and done, United have a few. United have Fernandes, who you can say is world-class. United have Ronaldo, who is world-class. You know, if Varane gets going, Varane is world-class. Obviously, coming off the back of a bad season, it sounds kind of absurd that I'm saying this. You look at Tottenham. Tottenham has Son, Kane, Romero, and Lloris, who I would say are world-class, you know, who are undisputed starters, at least for their countries, who are big countries. You know, I don't see that with Arsenal. Saka doesn't really start for England. If he does, he plays left back. Jesus is backup to Richarlison for Brazil. You know, Odegaard plays for Norway, which is not a bad rap on him, but it's just that, you know, they don't have that sort of, yes, it's a young team, but if you want to do well, you have to, what went wrong for Pochettino and Tottenham? They had a great young team, but none of those players actually, when it came down to it, knew how to, you know, get over that line. And that was a problem even when those players got older. When we got to that Champions League final against Liverpool that day were there for the taking, totally there for the taking. But just Tottenham's players didn't know how to react to playing in the Champions League final. I think that was the issue with Arsenal at the back end of last season. They didn't know how to react. Right? I mean, I was, even especially when they came to North London and when they came to Tottenham Stadium and they got rattled with that atmosphere. Right? Because Tottenham beat them comfortably. I was 100% sure that they were going to drop to Newcastle. And if they didn't drop to Newcastle, they would find a way to drop to Everton. I was 100% sure, because that they don't have that killer, you know, there's that meme, he's got that dog in him.
Yeah.
None of their players are like that. You know, I mean, if you think about it, they don't have that killer instinct. And you know, in a couple of years, I may be proved wrong. But I just think that Arsenal really need to go and get a player, you know, that is aggressive, that can really take the game by the scruff of its neck and you know, turn a game on its head for them. I don't know who that player would be. I think Rafinha would have definitely been that player. When they were going to sign Rafinha, I was like, okay. I was getting a bit worried. Very happy that he's probably going to either Barcelona or Chelsea. But yeah, I mean, I think it's still a good window. But we saw they spent a lot last summer. And I think barring Ramsdale, those players didn't really come through for them. I don't think Ben White had a particularly... Ben White definitely didn't have a 50 million player season, you know. But I mean, who would you think that Arsenal should sign? So we'll do this again next week. But I don't think there's much to talk about when it comes to Arsenal. Except that Jesus is a good signing for them.
I think Jesus
stylistically may really, really do well at Arsenal.
I think Jesus, I'm 100% sure he's going to have a great season. You know, he's always a player who I always found to be very underappreciated, both at City and both in world football, because he has the best goals to games ratio in Premier League history, if I'm not wrong. You know, so that proves that whenever he's called upon, he has delivered. It's hardly been games where he hasn't delivered.
But he's always had De Bruyne up giving him, you know, I mean.
And that comes to my second point. I think the marquee player that you're saying Arsenal need to sign, I think this season, and we saw glimpses of it last season for at least 2 to 3 months, Martin Odegaard. He doesn't play for a very jazzy country like, you know, Brazil or France or Germany. He plays for Norway. So does Haaland. But he's a Norwegian captain. He has that maturity in him, even though he's pretty young. He has the leadership qualities in him. He knows, so like I said, he's very mature and he has great skill, right? And what he does with the football, I'm a big fan of Martin Odegaard, right? Even though he left Madrid, even though he didn't have to leave Madrid, he left Madrid to try a new challenge. And I'm really happy for him. He did well last season. I think from January to March, that the 2.5 months period, he was absolutely breathtaking for Arsenal. And you know, that was his first full season in the Premier League. Give him this season, and I'm telling you, the marquee signing that you've been saying Arsenal need to sign, they already have him. Their number 8 goes by the name of Martin Odegaard. He's going to be the different maker. He's going to be not as good as De Bruyne this season, 120,000%, but he's going to be at least for Jesus, he's going to be that guy. You know, he's going to be that guy who's going to serve tasty balls to him on a silver platter that Gabriel can just take a bite of them.
But what I was saying was stylistically, I think Jesus fits that Arsenal attack because they're very fluid. And I think when Arsenal were at their best last season, when they were playing some really, really good football, even though it really pains me to say, they were moving, that front three was really fluid. So you didn't know who was going to turn up where. And there was that one goal they scored against Tottenham when we played them away in September. That was the day I was like, Nuno, isn't it? but there was this one goal where the Spurs defenders didn't know which attacker was where. And it was a really fluid move that Saka came and finished. So I think Jesus stylistically is that, you know, they've got that stylistically fits. I just feel with Arsenal that in terms of managerial quality, the gulf between them, United, and then the four teams with like really world-class managers is huge. And then I think again, they don't have that world-class level, enough of the world-class levels, even if Martin Odegaard comes through, to really, you know, maybe, you know, they could win the Europa League and that'll be a great thing for them. That'll give them that experience that they need. They already got an FA Cup with Arteta. So,
yeah,
I just don't think that they, you know, come March, April, they may try and prioritize that to get into the Champions League. But I think they need to, if they still can spend money because they wanted to spend 70 on Rafinha, I mean, they should go and maybe they should be the ones maybe trying for Sterling. You know?
Sterling on the right, Saka on the left, and Jesus in the middle. That's going to be a bomb front three.
Exactly. So maybe they should go and try for Sterling. You know? But moving to the other side of North London, the Champions League side of North London. it's been a year almost to the day since Nuno said he's going to make us proud. He said the same thing in his announcement for a club called Al Ittihad in I don't even know where it is.
He'll win manager of the month first month and then bounce.
Bro, I'm very scared. I don't want Conte to win manager of the month at all. When he comes on that list, I don't vote for him. Vote against you because that trophy is cursed. But anyways, it's been a year. Last year at this point, Kane wanted to leave. Didn't look like we were signing of anyone of consequence. We didn't have a good manager. I was not interested in even, you know, watching the next season of football. Fast forward a year, I can't wait, man. I'm excited for preseason games. You know, because we've got a world-class manager and for the first time since I've started supporting Tottenham, he's been back. Like, never in my wildest dreams would I think Tottenham would spend 60 million on a player that's not going straight into their starting 11. No, I think Richarlison, like I was just saying, that Arsenal need a player that grabs games by the scruff of their neck and, you know, takes the game to the opposition. And that's Richarlison. So coming off the bench, where we had Bergwijn and Moura last season, we're going to have Richarlison. Moura's still there, but we're going to have Richarlison. Depends on how we're playing. Perisic may be there. So what we've gone and done this season is they've gone and signed players who are experienced, right? Bissouma, Premier League experience. Richarlison, Premier League experience. Both quality Premier League experience. So these are players that have been doing it for the last 3-4 seasons in the Premier League. Then we've gone and signed Perisic. That's Champions League experience. And as a wing back, he was really, really good last season. He was really, really good with Conte as well. Longley, who we seem we're signing, I don't know if Conte wants, like I've said this in Tassana, if Conte wants him, I want him, but I don't know. You know, he's not had a good couple of years at Barca, but he was very good at Sevilla. And, you know, Conte back three, or sort of your shortcomings are sort of less exposed. Probably going to sign Jed Spence as well, who's highly rated. He was very, very good in all the games he played against Premier League opposition. He completely kept Martinelli in his pocket when they played Arsenal. I watched them play Leicester, Nottingham Forest. I watched them play Leicester last season. I think he got a brace in that game when they won 4-1. So I think it was really, really good last season. That signing I'm looking at as almost sort of like a Dele Alli signing when we got him from MK Dons. But I would still say we need to get in a creative midfielder. Still haven't got my head around why we didn't want Eriksen. Because he's the sort of perfect, he was free on a free. I think he would have come to Tottenham if we had given him a contract offer. I don't know why we didn't.
I think the part of the heart that died, unfortunately, that day was the part that loved Tottenham.
No, I think with Eriksen, what it is, I think he's made a comment earlier also about how he's not the type of person who goes back in his career.
Okay.
Right. So I think if United hadn't come in for him and Tottenham had gone in, obviously those are both two ifs, then if it was between Tottenham and Brentford, he would have gone to Tottenham. But it was between United and Brentford because Tottenham weren't interested. So I think it's understandable to see why he went to United. But I would still say that Tottenham need a creative midfielder. And if not a creative midfielder, they need another attacker. Because the five subs off the bench next season, we sold Bergwijn. So at the moment, only Richarlison and Moura would be on the bench. I would still want if we want to spend a lot of money, maybe try and go see if Leicester will sell Maddison. Lucas Paqueta maybe. But again, I don't really like the France to England transition. Maybe now that Dybala's move has not gone through, let's see.
Back to Dybala.
Yeah, but I think that we weren't really interested in him again at the beginning of the window. The one that was interesting for me was Jesse Lingard.
He would have been
if he was completely going to West Ham, that would be done because they've given him a contract offer. He's not accepted yet. So let's see. I think Tottenham are interested, according to Matt Law of Telegraph, who's very reliable. Let's see. But I think Tottenham need that creative midfielder and they need to wait and see what is the opportunity that comes up at either left centre-back or centre-back. A couple of players I have in mind, Gleison Bremer, who won the player defender of the season in the Serie A this season, like Romero before him. Bastoni, obviously, if the Skriniar to PSG situation changes, then maybe Bastoni opens up again. And I think that's maybe why Tottenham aren't going in just offering 40 million for Bremer right now, is because they think that the opportunity for Bastoni may come up again. Similar reason why I think they haven't gone for Pau Torres, who was, I think, third on that list. I think first was Bastoni, second was Guardiola from Leipzig, but he's not really, I think they're asking 80 million. I think he could go and become a player that's good for that value. But I just think that, you know, he may want to stay in Germany for another year. Pau Torres, again, United haven't gone for him. So he's always said he wanted to play in the Champions League. He said no to Tottenham last season because he wanted to play in the Champions League. So let's see, you know, if we can't get Bastoni, Bremer, or Guardiola or Pau Torres, I would say maybe go for Beno Badiashile from Monaco. He's very good. Evan Indica. A lot of players that you can go for, but I think Tottenham need to just be calm on that position. Because if they can't get that Bastoni, Guardiola quality this summer, then they should wait next summer. They should just get Longley and maybe Bremer as a center back.
Yeah.
And just sort of go ahead with these options and relook at it in January. Because I mean, they should spend a good chunk of that. Because I think Davies did pretty well last season. Tottenham have pretty much done all their business. They've done pretty early. I'm very happy. I think they'll get two more this week before they go to Korea for preseason. And I think this may get them with obviously Conte and how he's been backed. Extra staff he's got this summer. They've got Italy's set piece coach. Very interesting read in the article in the Athletic about him. His name is Gianno Vio. Apparently one of the best set piece coaches in the world. And Tottenham had that problem last season and the season before as well, that they were being beaten at set pieces and they weren't being able to score from them. So moving to the team, to the other team that they're trying to challenge, Liverpool. Again, did their business early, not much business, cleared up two sort of situations that could have become a saga. With the Salah contract, with him signing a new one and Mane leaving, both happened pretty fairly quickly without much drama and fuss about them. Nunez also the same way. They signed Carvalho from Fulham. I just think that they missed a trick in signing someone for I don't think they would have gone for Bellingham this summer. I don't think Dortmund would have sold Bellingham this summer.
But yeah,
getting someone in midfield, you know, because if Thiago gets injured, then they sort of struggle. I think that's the only point in the Liverpool team where I'm unsure of. But yeah, I think we pretty much covered everybody that we want to talk about. Anyone else? Obviously, PSG was a lot going on, but there's not much.
Yeah, plus PSG, let's be honest. I mean,
PSG is PSG.
Yeah, PSG is pretty relevant. Plus, I don't like PSG.
I mean, they've got a very, very good manager though. This Galtier is very, very good.
The thing
with PSG is that Pochettino is also very, very good. But you know, PSG never seems to work there.
Plus, anyway, now that you know, a player has a lot of control, Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird what's happening in the club. It's not football.
So, yeah, so let's see. I mean, that's the transfer window so far from our end. Let us know if we've missed anything out, if you want us to discuss anything next week. Thank you for everyone who's listening and who's made it to the end of the podcast. So, like I said, we're going to try and keep it a little more regular. We've got another transfer episode coming out next week. Then we're going to talk about the FPL. We're going to sort of this month, we'll keep it a little more towards the Premier League and then get into the other leagues once the Premier League's finally kicked off. Like always, we'll talk about the La Liga and Serie A next month. And we're just going to try and get you some good content on Instagram, Twitter, etc. over the next couple of weeks. I'll be going back to the stadium to watch Spurs. So maybe we can do a little bit about, you know, we can do a reel. Ari's forcing me to do reels, so we can do
reels. Is the way, is the only way.
about going to the going and watching the Premier League, etc. So yeah, let us know if you'd like to hear any topics from us, etc. And as always, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening, guys. Stay safe.